This interview is with Mrs. Linda Sander, Mrs. Frank Sander, whose husband served in a position that will be of interest to you when I interview her. This interview is held at Morehead State University's recording studio. The interviewer is Ruth Herring, representing the Heritage Education Commission. And now I'll ask you, Linda, to tell me a little bit about Frank's. Why don't you start out and tell your name and his name and your address and things like that that have to do with your own and his personal information. Then we'll get into his business.
Well, I'm Linda Sander of 308 South 13th Street in Morehead, living in a temporary home, but after 45 years, I think it's permanent. So, Mr. Sander came up here in 1928. I didn't come along the first year. I came up to visit him a couple of times, but we were married in February of 1928, he was a federal state inspector of fruits and vegetables, and most of the business up here was potatoes and onions. He had 6 and 8 inspectors under him at all times, and some of them were from Minneapolis, and some had been trained up here.
Was here for a year, you moved up.
Yes, mm-hmm. It was quite a chore to find a living quarters because we came up at the same time. All the students came to go to school, and so we.
In September, you mean?
In September. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then because he was was paid by the state of Minnesota, licensed by the federal government, but we had to live in Minnesota, and so we couldn't go to Fargo to live. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it wasn't very much fun to find places because we weren't here in the summertime. And we had to find, and at one time we had furniture in 4 towns in Minnesota, so.
Did he work in other towns?
Minneapolis and Fairfax. We had furniture in Fairfax, too, so is where his home was in Fairfax. Mine was in Fairmont, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I worked in Rochester. We met in Rochester, though. Mm-hmm. We were both in the bank, in a bank in Rochester.
What was the training or preparation that got him into the fruit and vegetable inspection business in?
Well, he was born and raised on a farm, and he was always interested in it, and I don't know, he was just a born inspector, I guess.
Uh-huh. And what were his duties? Now tell what you're reading from there. That's kind of interesting.
This is a report that he gave at one time, that his duties were those of a deputy inspector of potatoes, and when any person desiring to ship a car, it is his duty to go out and grade such potatoes in accordance with the provisions of the contract between the federal and the state government and grading laws established by both the U.S. government and the state of Minnesota. It is also one of the additional duties of his office to be on the alert and report to the department and any unlicensed dealers and any violations of the law in regard to the handling and inspection of potatoes. This oftentimes took a great deal of additional work for which he didn't receive any compensation. Inspection work on potatoes usually lasted about 8 months, and the summer months were spent in working with the university farm in connection with the University of Minnesota, and inspecting fields for certification, and
he worked in St. Paul for that.
The office was in St. Paul, mm-hmm. But he was all over the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And you told.
And I stayed in Minneapolis at the time, so. Mm-hmm.
You told me that because of this being a government job, he really wasn't able to take part in politics. You mentioned that one time. Is that?
Yes, he wasn't. But
did he ever hold any political office or appointed office when he was later on, or did he ever get involved in politics or government?
No, he wasn't. He was requested to run for offices and stuff, but he never did. The biggest thing, or closest he came, was to be one of the on the council of Minnesota Moorhead. But
he was on the Moorhead City.
No, he wasn't on the council, but they wanted him to be. But he didn't because his business. That was when he'd gone into business for himself. It's Sabin, Minnesota, and. When we came up here, we were moving in different houses. Sometimes we got a furnished house, and sometimes we got a couple small apartments. And we had apartments that expanded, where the apartments cost as much as to rent a beautiful home in Minneapolis. So,
oh, that's interesting.
And they weren't so good here. But
no. Tell me a little bit about his job, because you were telling me about his inspecting the railroad cars before they left here, and you said it wasn't required. They would call him and ask him to.
It was, but later on, after the dealers, they liked the work so well. It was, he was asked to join the department over in North Dakota, but he stayed with Minnesota. And Rodney Hastings was one of the inspectors that worked with him in Minneapolis when they were on the inspection force, and he
would go out to a siding, and there'd be a trainload of potatoes ready to go to shipment.
Yeah, and sometimes they would inspect them before they were loaded too, so that if they wanted to regrade them, you know, and
they'd get a grade or something, and then he'd seal the railroad car.
U.S. number one. Mm-hmm. And different grades. And
we were saying potatoes were a big crop for our area at that time, and now we really don't hear much about
it. They had train loads of loaded potato cars, and 8 inspectors could work all day inspecting potatoes.
Yeah, from all of the communities on this side of the river, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Up how far?
Well, they went up to East Grand Forks, and
they go up to the border.
No, they did, yes, but they had other people up there.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And so we had to keep track of where the inspectors were at all times. And
that was your job on the phone.
That was mine. I had a lot of fun doing that too. And
did you like?
But
that?
You couldn't. It wouldn't be possible to call some of these places and say, are the inspectors in town? And they'd know, because the telephone operators, you talked to the telephone operators those days, and they would know who.
They were right in the middle of town.
And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of fun.
And they'd say, well, he's down at the cafe having coffee, and we'd get in touch with him. And
What about the Depression? What about when... because he was working from 1927 through
1930. 1928 to 37.
Mm-hmm. So he worked right through what we consider the hard times and the blowing dust. Were there potatoes?
Well, there were some pretty dusty storms. There were good potatoes, too, though. But I think the potato business went down after the Depression, though, more than... Because they had plenty of work as far as the potatoes were concerned. And
mm-hmm. And so the farms around here were able to grow, were they irrigating? Or
no, uh-uh. Mm-hmm. They didn't do any irrigating at that time. So.
Mm-hmm. And potatoes and onions, you said he was both a fruit and vegetable inspector, but...
But most of it was potatoes and onions. Mm-hmm. And... The dealers would come up from Chicago and make their headquarters at the Comstock or the Columbia Hotel. And we used to kid because, he came up here. They had an office at the City Hall.
Mm.
And
the old City Hall there in the corner.
City Hall. Mm-hmm.
And And what happened in the office, or?
Well, then they took care of the calls there for the first year. And when I came up, they had enough to do. And I used to go down to the city hall and in the, what did they call the office? It was Ted Brandt's office, I can't remember. I guess that was the city clerk, yes. And that's, so they took care of the inspections down there. And the first year, then it gained in volume, you know. So
well, I would think there'd be a lot of paperwork.
There was a lot of paperwork. I used to do. The inspectors would bring the reports in, and I typed till 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, and got the reports out for the dealers the next day. And
were you a paid employee?
I got $30 a month.
$30 a month.
Well, that was big pay, though.
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, that was in 1930 and 32, and when the banks closed. And
yes. Did you have money in the banks that closed?
We lost everything we had.
Did you? Mm-hmm. A Morehead Bank, or?
No, we had. There was not the bank account, but my husband had stock in the bank and lost that, and then they had double indemnity, so that he had to pay that too. So we were working to take care of. It wasn't any fun, but we got by and had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
When you're young, you can do a lot of things.
You had a family?
We got a family after that. Mm-hmm. I was a bride when I came up here. So.
Do you just have, I know you have one daughter.
Just the one daughter. Mm-hmm.
And her name is?
Arlene Methune.
Arlene Methune.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in Morehead and teaches in West Fargo, is that right?
No, she teaches in Fargo.
Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Special ed.
And
her husband teaches in West Fargo.
In West Fargo. Okay. And did you have any friends or acquaintances or anyone that you kind of remember from those days in local government that you might have any reference to in this interview?
Well, there were a lot of wonderful people around, and Sabin, I think the Thompsons and McEvers and some of those from Baker and Sabin and Barnesville, and mm-hmm. Aunt and Son down at Rothsay had a lot of potatoes. We went down there. We went down that far with inspections and.
Mm-hmm.
And had a nice bunch of inspectors. And
you say after he left the government service, he worked for a local?
Yeah, he worked for Leo Wright and John L. Whitnack, two dealers. And then
two potato dealers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then? And then
he got smallpox.
Oh.
He'd been vaccinated for smallpox for 11 times, I think it was, when he was in the service, in the Army, he can't say they was in service because he went down and the war ended before he got overseas or anything like that, so he didn't see any active service, but, and he was in a potato warehouse, but afterwards they said he was just, The vaccination never worked on him, but he sure had a terrible case of smallpox.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that in connection with his leaving state employment.
No, that
then?
Was after he.
Oh,
that was after. That
this was when he was
working for Leo Wright.
In his private.
Private. Mm-hmm.
And then you said after that.
Then he went into business for himself.
Mm-hmm.
It gradually everything came up. He went into insecticide and fungicides and fertilizer. And
where did he have his business office or the location?
In our house, and then but he had the warehouse at Sabin. So
mm-hmm.
He was in with, she started in with Herman Miller, at Saban. He had a warehouse, and so he went in with that, and then he went in. That was just sort of a buying and selling. But then that he wasn't in the insecticide business. Then when he went in for himself, he went in. He was just starting to make some money when he got sick and died.
Mm-hmm. You say he could walk into a bank and got a loan to start his business?
That wasn't to start it. That was after he was in the business. That was later on. But that was just a couple of years before he passed away. And to buy a carload of burlap bags, $18,000 for
just could do that just on his name.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. Pretty good indication. Yes. They considered him a good businessman. And you worked for a while too, Linda. Want to tell a little bit about that? Your own job after you were widowed.
I met my husband the first time I met him, we were in Rochester, Minnesota, and we both worked in Fargo National Bank, and then I went to work at the Mayo Clinic, and he went out to, the bank was sold, and he went to work in the First National Bank at Rochester, but then he got an offer, a job in Iron Mountain, Michigan. He was vice president of a bank out there, and we had, once in a while, we'd just Christmas cards or something. That's and ended up getting married. So,
but you said you worked for Mr. Garrity.
Yes, after my husband died in 1952, I think it was 1954. My daughter and I took a trip to Europe and the Scandinavian countries and down into Italy and Venice, and had a trip and came back home, and they asked if I would help Jim out at part-time, but the job became from 9 to 5, 5 days a week. So it,
this is Mr. Garrity Sr. then.
No, that was what that asked me to work for him, but I was working for Jim Jr., who is now his Judge Garrity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And where was that?
That was in Moorhead, up over the, they had the office over the Waterman store. Mm-hmm. And it was really an interesting job. And I didn't know whether I was going to, it was a lifesaver as far as I was concerned, because mm-hmm. I'd been busy with my husband with all the work, and it was kind of a good thing to.
Mm-hmm. By that time, your daughter was married and were no longer needed your full attention anyway.
She wasn't married at that time. She was married in 55. And, mm-hmm. and
but you were anxious to have some work to do.
And so she came home and, when her father took sick. She had 1 year teaching at Rochester, Minnesota, and we really had a nice all the people, all the dealers in Moorhead were nice people, and Arlene went to Moorhead State mm-hmm. from kindergarten through the eighth grade. And
your home location is a nice advantage to that.
Well, that was just a temporary home.
If you wake up in the middle of the night now, do you consider Moorhead home?
I think I do.
Well, I think we're all glad you're here.
I kind of thought that when I first came up here, Moorhead was just a population of about 4,000, and the streets had a block paving, you know, wouldn't, when the rain, the blocks had come up, and they'd have to pound them back down, and if you wanted to knew any shopping, you had to go over to Fargo to do it. But they had good grocery stores, and they had a lot of good grocery stores.
And you'd had streetcars?
Yeah, we had streetcars going over, and it wasn't hard to walk over to Fargo either. So, but I know when people came up, and we live on 13th Street now, it's 8 blocks from downtown, and they'd say, "Well, why don't you sell your cow, sell your cow and move to town?" At the town, and from our house over to Morehead State, there were no houses when we moved out there.
Oh, was yours an only house on the block then, or?
Well, it was an old house there, you know. And we had lived on the, you know, on 4th Avenue, on the corner of 4th Avenue. You say you lived on 4th Avenue, too?
Mm-hmm, 12th. We also talked earlier about the convenience of the railroads. Do you want to mention a little bit about that?
Well, if you want to go down to the city for anything, why, you could go down and catch some early train down and come back at night for $4 and
have a nice meal on the train.
Yes. It was the Red River.
Two lines, really.
Yeah. You could either go the Great Northern or the
NP.
NP.
And
I was talking to one of the women that with F.L. Bailing this morning, and she said the railroads just have coal cars now. I don't think they cater to potatoes at all anymore. And it was nothing to have 25 or 30 cars, trainload of cars going down to down south, especially at certified seed time.
Where'd they go?
Well, they go down to Missouri and way down to Florida. They shipped them all over.
They go to Chicago first?
Yeah, I think they used to go to Chicago first. And
or Minneapolis? Or. And so they might get inspected many times then, or was the one seal adequate?
The one seal was all, unless there was a controversy about it. And
and you said in the winter they had to?
They had to heat them. In the summer, they had to have them iced. And I know there was one man that the inspectors had to be careful because there was gas that they could become gassed if they got in there. They'd have to open up and let the gas out of the cars and the heat from the gas.
Oh.
I know there was one man from North Dakota that got in the car and they found his body down on the way down. He didn't make it. They shipped the car out without checking for his body. It wasn't one of our inspectors, but.
Well, you mean the fire had gone out and the gas?
No, the gas is the fire caused. Was a certain amount of gas in there, you know, and that heated the car.
Oh, wow! Well, that's awful. You'd think there'd be explosions.
No, it wasn't that kind of gas, I guess.
Okay.
Would kill you, but not to. I'm glad I found this.
Yes, I'm glad you did too. Did you have anything else that I haven't remembered to ask you that maybe you'd like to touch on in life and times in early Morehead?
Well, after I went to work, I was president of the Business and Professional Women's Club in Morehead. It was rather a new organization at that time. I'd been going.
Was it affiliated with the Fargo chapter?
No, it wasn't. It was just the.
And so you were kind of a pioneer president then.
No, there was it had been running for 3 or 4 years when I was president.
And were there a lot of women employees?
There was quite a good bunch of women, and I think there must have been about 50 women maybe it belonged, or maybe not quite.
Do you remember what you made when you worked at Garrity's office?
$1.25 an hour.
$1.25 an hour. That was probably pretty good wages too.
That was the best.
Was it?
Oh. It was top.
Yeah. What'd you do? Walk to work and.
Yeah.
Walk to work and have an hour off for lunch. Would you walk home?
Yes.
Walk home at noon.
And later on, the first year I came home most of the time, and then after that, I. It was a lot of fun because then I'd stay downtown and eat lunch with, and I was an older, and I had all the young girls were, and I guess they didn't seem to mind the fact that there was an old lady in there. Now I'm real old.
And you're still not old, so that's pretty good.
Well, when it comes to age, right, my daughter was talking to her dad one day, and she said to somebody, "Oh, she's old." And her dad says, "Well, how old is she?" "Oh, she's real, real old." And he said, "Well, how old is she?" "She's 17 years old." But
that
she got a good
Everything's
start.
Everything's relative.
She got a good start in Morehead State.
Oh, that's marvelous to hear. Thank you.
From kindergarten on, she started kindergarten when she was 4 years old, and I thought we thought she would be in for 2 years, but they passed her. And Mrs. Gerbro was the kindergarten teacher, and she said that she was able to go into first grade when she was 5 years old.
Oh. Did she did she graduate then at 17? Did she continue at that same pace?
But she went from when she was in the, she went from the ninth grade, from 3 years to Morehead High.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they cut out the school.
Yes, it's changed.
But really, she got a marvelous education here.
Yeah, my kids went too, and I agree.
It's a shame to not to have it anymore.
Mm-hmm. It was just, I guess those are the changing times. I don't think there's any campus schools now in any of the...
I don't think so either.
...in any of the state university system, so...
Well, I came almost, I came pretty close to being a teacher, but then I started school when I was 4 years old, and, and I skipped third grade, and I was too young to go away to college, and I took a business course, and that I started to go to normal school, and then a friend talked me into taking the business course, and then I was going to do some different things, and I started to take a trip around the world when I was right out of high school.
Wow.
With two other girls, we got as far as Seattle, Washington, and working our way, and had our plans for the Orient and everything. But I was the youngest. I was just a, but I was the boss of the bunch anyhow, though, because there was anything that. But then we were all called home. The first girl was called home because her mother was killed in a car accident. And was called home from Seattle because my mother was sick. And she died. And the other girl was called home because her sister got sick. So
wow.
We never got together again.
What year would that have been?
It was in 1921, 22.
You weren't afraid to go around the world. In 1921 or 22, you were heading for the Orient. That
I was 18 years old.
Sounds scary. Sounds scary to me now.
Well, some of the things.
Well,
it was a lot of fun anyhow.
I thank you very much, Mrs. Sander. It was very interesting to hear about some of these times. And if when they go through it, if they find that they would like to have a little more information, well, I'll have you come back again. Is that okay?
I did tell you about that we were we had the women's forum in Morehead.
Tell me about that.
And then I was asked to be on the steering committee for that, and it was I think maybe that was non-political, but it was a political party too, because they had big parties here, and had like Young Dolls came up here and talked, and. And Humphrey and all the big shots in the state of Minnesota would come up for meetings. And
where did you have the speeches then? Where were these lectures?
Most of them were at the Comstock Hotel. They had a big room there. And
so you would sponsor it and charge admission? Is that how the...
Well, for the banquets and things they did. Yeah, but then they had meetings. And then finally it got to... became the Clay County, and then Fargo got in on it too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Fargo-Moorhead Women's Forum, and then there was 100 or more women that belonged, and we came up, and then it died down. And I don't think there's no one there. Maybe there's a half a dozen
You had about four speeches a year then, or one a year, or how did it work?
No, and during, because they had Young Doe was a Republican and Humphrey was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. But federal employees were not supposed to. Well, then we weren't federal employees anymore then, so we could do what we wanted to.
Mm-hmm. That old Hatch Act, weren't supposed to be involved. Okay, well, I appreciate the interview.